This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
You are listening to The Mauer Report, a live radio show that ventures into the mysteries of life, as well as the hot topics of the day, either political or business.
The only thing, if I can say, is I don't talk politics, so please don't put me in that position.
Dave, I'm not going to put you in that position because, you know what, I've got a bunch of things. They're all media-related, I guess, TV, radio.
Sure.
All that fun stuff, so we'll get there. My guest tonight is Dave Schrader. You just heard him. Dave, how are you doing tonight, first and foremost?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
So you're here to talk about the Holzer Files, so I've got to start there, because if I don't start there, I'll be being disloyal to why you're here. And I appreciate that. So second season. Let's rewind the tape way back. For the people out there who live under a rock and don't know who Hans Holzer was, can you give me a few seconds about him, and then we'll work going forward from there?
Yeah, Dr. Hans Holzer was a paranormal investigator. He kind of coined the phrase ghost hunter and the other side, and he really helped to bring it to the forefront and make it water cooler talk instead of hushed tones and whispers of people being crazy. He let people know that it was okay to have these kind of experiences and talk about them. And he wrote over 140 books, I believe it is, starred on many different TV shows, radio shows, and the like, and really kind of brought it to the foreground. And we get a chance to reopen his investigations 10 years after he passed away last year. We were given opportunities to go back in and examine those original case files that are 60, 50, 40, 30 years old, and go back and see what the story tells us now.
Dave, I keep promising people I'm going to write my first book, and you just told me Hans wrote 140. I don't know how to deal with that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. That guy's an overachiever.
Maybe I'll just say he wrote one for me and call it a day.
I think Richard Estep might be on his heels, though.
Oh, man, I've been doing this show for almost 10 years, and I've been promising ever since I started it to do one. Of course, Dave, you'll appreciate this. The joke is I need a ghostwriter.
Paranormal. Boom, boom. Hi-oh.
Yeah. So, bring me up to speed on how this all came together, though, because, I mean, obviously, he passed 10 years ago, so what made this happen now?
Well, my understanding is that Alexander had been working with this production company for quite a while on some different ideas, maybe even a scripted TV series like The X-Files, and then reality just kept knocking on the door, and it seemed like a perfect fit. It's, you know, when they originally started, I don't think the Warrens movies were as popular as they are now. So thankfully the shift came to reality, and then they spent the last 4 years trying to shape a reality show, and what would they do? How would they be different? And really the star of the show are the files. To go back in, this guy kept copious notes. He recorded everything. He filmed and photographed everything he possibly could. So we have this great in-depth presentation of each case that we can go in and examine and see. You know, he never believed a case was truly closed. We might end a chapter of that case, but what comes next, or what is there still to be revealed that might be haunting the location before the spirits he came into contact with? So we get to go back in and re-examine all these cases with a fresh set of eyes in the 21st century, new technology he didn't have available to him, new methods of research that he didn't have available to him, and go even further in his work than he was able to do.
Yeah, I see you're thinking it's remarkable to have that detailed notes and all of that stuff. I mean, I know my notes aren't that great. I don't think there's no going to be Mallard files here in
not with that attitude.
Well, not with my note taking, Dave. If anybody could read it, Maybe it'll be like the answer, you know, trying to figure out what the hieroglyphics stood for. And then maybe
is your handwriting that between a serial killer and a doctor? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Well, I'm not going to go serial killer because I don't know that much, but I did. we were at the doctor's office the other day and the doctor looked at my writing and went, "That's bad." So there's that for me.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now we've kind of got the backstory. So I know Shane Pittman and, I should have wrote this down earlier.
Cindy Kaza.
Yeah. And you.
He is our medium. Shane Pittman and myself are the on the floor investigative team. Alexandra Holzer, who has been working with these files, researching in them, and really is very proficient in them because, of course, her father used to talk to her about these cases. She's kind of that voice at the beginning of every episode where we sit down with her and Gabe Roth, our researcher, to examine a case file and see if it's worthy of going out to examine.
So in this process, I'm sure you've got to go to a lot of unique places. And I know this is the radio show question, right? Who's been your favorite guest? I'm not going to ask you to do that. I know better than that because I've been asked that question and it's a nightmare. But if you had to, pick one that would be the prime example of why it's important to do this show and get back into these files, maybe that's a better question.
I think, the episode that just aired, number 4, with the Franklin Castle, the name of the episode is Final Word. I think that's a perfect example where, Dr. Holzer went in off of the information that he was given by the family that lived at the location at the time, and he did his own research and just couldn't find any corroborating evidence. He investigated 2 times and went back for a 3rd time because his technology kept failing. His recorders, everything just wasn't working right. So he went back with a medium and the owner threw him out. And it was this radical change of why she had invited him. And then all of a sudden she throws him out. And, something we didn't air on the program but talked about was Dee Romano, the daughter, admitted this is probably what happened, is the mother used to be, for lack of a better term, possessed by the female spirit of the house. And she said she could always tell when that took place because her mom would get really mean and strict all of a sudden. And she believed that was the former resident's spirit and personality taking over. And I said, well, isn't that interesting? Because the first 2 times Hans came here, he came without a medium. The 3rd time he returned with a medium to try to channel that spirit, and she did not seem to like it. She threw him out pretty quickly. And Dee Romano agreed, yeah, that's probably exactly what happened. So it was pretty interesting to hear that, but we got a chance to re-examine that case and put an answer to why Hans was asked to leave, to understand what type of spirits were taking place there, and hopefully put right the story, because for decades, many false stories have been perpetrated about that home and about the family that lived there, and or perpetuated, I should say, not perpetrated, but many false stories were perpetrated from there, and it's good to go in and try to clear the name and show that there is no information to back or prove any of these claims. As a matter of fact, we can track when these claims suddenly appeared, and it's when people who started using the location for tours and other things took it over. It seems pretty interesting that at that point somebody's able to uncover these crazy mysteries. So we're glad that we were able to go back in and give the proper answers to what really took place with this family and why they were dealing with the issues that they were dealing with.
Yeah, so I want to follow up on a point that you kind of, I don't want to say brushed over, but I think it's worth noting, because of reality TV has its own set of baggage, right? I think you could definitely agree to that.
Sure.
So how do you walk that line between being what the network's looking for and being true to what you're looking for?
I'll give credit where credit is due. The production company we work with, Painless Television, are very good at what they do, and they've been producing numerous TV shows over the years, and they've done Dead Files now for I think 14 seasons on Travel. Travel likes Painless and trusts them, and you know, they want ghosts all the time. They want demonic and spooky and scary, but they also understand that our show isn't that. We're not specifically looking for the demon of the week. We're trying to make sense of these paranormal moments and what is taking place, trying to put the pieces together. Like, I feel our show is a very good mixture of true crime and the paranormal. And we're trying to lock the pieces in place to make sense of the case. And that's what we've come up with. So they don't put pressure on us to perform any way or do anything. If Cindy cannot connect to something in the home, we don't fabricate it. That's what happens. She just doesn't connect. If we can't connect with a piece of equipment, which I've had happen, there's been places where we go in and I feel like, boy, nothing happened. And we have a great example of that coming up this season. I was really bummed out. I thought, man, this place is so active for so many people, but nothing happening. And then when we reviewed the evidence, something was happening. I just wasn't aware of it, and it was out of my range. And sure enough, we captured some pretty cool activity. So, you know, we keep control of the evidence. So as soon as we get done with the investigation, Shane takes it and goes over it, make sure that it's all exactly as it was taken out of the cameras and recorders. Nothing has been manipulated or altered. And we're very proud to be a part of the show and present the facts the way we find them. And so far, the network has really enjoyed it because they like that we're good storytellers and that we take good care of what we do.
So, Dave, I'm going to give you the fun part of this interview. Well, one of the fun parts, because you know.
Well, God, it's about time. Oh, no.
give me the – it's Travel Channel Win, where all that fun stuff, because, you know.
Thursday night. For
you. Thursday nights.
It's on the Travel Channel. It's 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 9 p.m. Central. And then right afterwards, right after the live show at 10 p.m. Central, 11 p.m. Eastern, if you go over to my YouTube page at Darkness Radio or to my Facebook page at Darkness Radio Dave, I do a live video stream called The After Show. It's the Holzer's Ghosts After Show, where I have a few special guests that come on and talk over the case that we just showed on TV. We'll go a little deeper into the story, reveal a few other things that maybe didn't make the final cut. Because you have to remember, Jim, we film 5 days, 12 to 14 hours a day. All of that gets cut down to 42 minutes.
I'm out of fingers, but 5 times 10 is
50.
Yeah,
that's a lot of hours.
Because even at 50, that's less than a minute per hour.
Yeah, so we've got so much that has to be cut out and looked at. And there are things that bum us out that we lose. But again, like our producers always say, what would you have removed from this episode to share that piece of information or evidence? And you're right. You're like, it's such a carefully built Jenga tower that if you remove one part, it kind of affects the entire storytelling. So we stick with, you know, the main thrust of the investigation, what is really the most compelling and important parts of the story. It doesn't mean we can't go back and reexamine those cases for the other things that happened.
Yeah, and that's the fun part of this all, right? Like, I'm glad there's stuff that you're upset that isn't in there, right? Because it could be the other way, where you're trying to build in stuff just to have stuff.
Right, yeah, I'm extremely psyched that there's extra stuff that doesn't make it. That's how good everything is going. So we are, you know, looking forward to moving forward. We could probably do an easy 15 seasons without really reproducing what we're doing, and then probably another 5 by going back and reexamining the cases we've already done to answer some questions that we were left with after the first visit.
Well, here's hoping for you, Dave. I mean, I know that the market is changing and evolving and all this other stuff, and you're right. I think it does fall into the two genres that make it interesting. So,
well, that's the hopes. I'm hoping that we see, you know, I'd like to see 10 seasons with this because we do have so many great stories to tell.
And Germantown Runner just popped it up in the chat room, so I'm going to ask it right now. I'm going to go Ron Burgundy on it.
Okay.
So watch out. Is there a saturation point for paranormal TV and content, or is there endless possibilities?
Listen, we've been thinking that for 15 years, right? Well, actually now 17 years. If you want to even go back 20 years with Most Haunted, you know, Most Haunted kind of kicked off the genre, and then there was Dead Famous over in England, and then, you know, the Ghost Hunters over here, and then Paranormal State and Ghost Adventures and a plethora of other shows. the cream of the crop rises to the top. And, you know, the ones that don't make it or aren't compelling fall to the wayside. So I think as long as there's good storytelling to be told and interesting evidence to share and fun characters to be around, it'll continue for a good long time. I don't think we're going to be able to put this genie back in the bottle.
And while we're asking paranormal questions, I got a question from Paranormal Heart Cat. Waves. Oh, there it is. There's the camera. Waves hello. You think I've been doing this the YouTube thing for a while now? You think I know where the camera is? My studio.
Right.
But anyways, if Dave could invent one piece of paranormal investigative equipment, what would it be and why?
I'm sorry. If I could do what?
Invent one piece of equipment for investigations. What would it be and why?
Boy, that's. Yeah. I don't know. There's already so many great examples of tools out there. You know, I guess I just wish I could come up with one that was a little bit more concise and could really lock in on different visual spectrums without, you know, you got to kind of figure if the spirits really do exist in a UV or IR environment and you bask the room, are you bleaching them out, making it harder for them to be seen because now you're actually loading the area with the same kind of light, so it might not make them as noticeable. I don't know. I'd just love to be able to create a camera that allows you to slowly dial in each level that makes it translatable so that your eyes can see it and translate it. And when you find the right frequency, for lack of a better term, you find the ghost channel. And that would be something I'd love to be a part of.
Next question from Brian Bowden. He wants to know, we've seen a lot of ghost and UFO shows. What should be the next topic of focus?
I would love to see, in all honesty, and I'm going to be, you know, totally rude about this. I want to do a buddy show with Jeff Belanger, where the two of us hop in a car and just go legend tripping across the United States, where we're not held down to just ghosts or UFOs. Or Bigfoot, we can investigate all the strange claims that we come upon because I think it's time. People can accept some humor with the supernatural because truthfully, I like when that's why I think shows like Scream and even Nightmare on Elm Street worked so well for so long because there's these elements where you're taken off the edge of your seat and you're allowed to relax and breathe. And then boom, you're right back into the fear factor. And that makes it even more disturbing because when you're in that edge of your seat the whole time and you don't get a chance to breathe and you don't get a chance to, you know, relax again, it starts to desensitize the viewer, I think. So I would love to just be Jeff Belanger and Dave Schrader and hit the road and have our scary moments and have our funny moments and, you know, the occasional breaking of the fourth wall by the slow eye roll to the camera as you talk to that unique individual that you can tell has probably sniffed one too many paint fumes as they're telling you their story. I just think that would be great. I think, you know, kind of mixing the paranormal and real people genre together and throwing us out there to see what we can find.
And there's a lot of things. I'm thinking about Mothman and the Jersey Devil. I mean, like, you could do a cross-the-country tour without any problems.
Oh, without a doubt, you could get out there and we could have so many different topics. And here's the fun thing. In every town you hear of, there's some haunted legend that's very famous. But sometimes when you go in and you start kicking rocks around, which is what happened for me at some of these locations, they'll tell me, yeah, you think that place is crazy. You should go check out this. And suddenly I'm on a new pathway and I'm connecting with somebody on a story I didn't see coming. And that's exciting to me. I would love more of those moments. And then you find a new story and a new legend that you can uncover and share with the people. And, you know, I think that's still something waiting to be told.
Yeah.
The problem is TV wants it. You know, they want to know where it's coming from. They want to know where you're going and what you're going to be doing. And you know, they want kind of the story, not like mapped out in the sense of what's going to happen to them. How are they going to do this? But they don't like to fly by the seat of their pants. Having two guys just go out on the road and explore what happens, I think it's going to be something that we have to document, pay for ourselves, cut it, and then supply it and give them a chance to see a finished product. And that would be the kind of show I would love to be a part of.
Makes complete sense to me. I'm trying to read. That's not good. What production challenges has the show faced due to the virus?
Well, right now, you know, the toughest thing was being shut down halfway through the season. We had filmed like 5 episodes, and you suddenly get sent home and you're in this place of fear, because at the point that we were out there, you know, we had just come off filming 2 back-to-back episodes in New York City, and we were staying in Chinatown. And then at the time, mind you, I'm making it clear, at the time it was the China flu, right? It was this Wuhan flu, and you're like, wait a minute, we're in Chinatown, and New York is this hotbed, and you start having this fear. And then, oh my gosh, they might be closing down state borders and travel may be shut down. And so that was really kind of much scarier than anything paranormal that was going on. And then going home for 3 months and just the uncertainty of not knowing. But then when they put together a plan and they set about working on a plan right away so that when restrictions lifted and we could kind of go back out into the world, we'd be ready for it. And they took our information, they took our thoughts and concerns and made sure to make it work. And our production company and Discovery Networks and Travel Channel were very obliging to make sure that we all felt safe. They kept in contact with us all the time. Are you okay? Do you feel everything safe on set? Are you happy with the way things are going? Do you want to go home? They were very good about that. And so it worked out well. And we were tested constantly. So that was really the only challenge. You know, on set, you really couldn't tell. And then we were all kept apart. That was the only bummer. Because Shane and I, you know, we usually keep away from Cindy anyway because we don't want to taint her and by accident slip up and talk about part of the case in front of her. So we've always just kind of, the two of us have gone out and done things together. And in this instance, we went on set, we filmed, we all went back to our hotel rooms until we were called back on set. So there was a lot of downtime.
So for the listeners out there, I'm going to shift gears, but if we need to, we could come back to the Holzer Files and the paranormal. But I've got Darkness Dave from Darkness Radio here, and I've got some questions.
Fire away, brother.
Calm down, everybody. When did you start? Let's talk radio for a minute. When did you start doing the original show? Way back.
January 1st, 2006, we launched Darkness Radio. So that was kind of a big deal. January 1st, 2006.
How did you get that going? Because, I mean, obviously Coast was a thing at that point, but this was most of this television stuff. So how did that all come together?
Well, kind of as a weird aside, I had done college radio with Tim, and he stayed in radio because he was a single guy with no kids and he could live off of radio money. I was a dad and had to make a real living to survive. So we stayed good, close friends. And, you know, I moved to Minnesota and we lived minutes away from each other. And he was working for a radio station in 2005 that he was kind of working as a general manager for, and said, hey, Sunday nights, we've got an hour to kill. Sunday nights, 11 to midnight. And I go, cool. He goes, you want to do a show together? I'm like, yeah, what kind of show? I said, how about if we do paranormal? It's the perfect time slot for it. Coast to Coast is really the only other show out there doing this. And, you know, he thought for a second. He's like, well, if you feel we could do something like that, I'll take it to the station manager. And I said, let me see if I can book some guests. And I reached out, and my first guest was Jason Hawes, then Rosemary Ellen Guiley, then John Zaffis, and then a local author who wrote about a haunted home right in Minnesota. So suddenly they were willing to open up the doors and give us a shot. And we launched on January 1st, 2006. We went for an hour every Sunday night. After, I think, a month, we got pushed to 2 hours, and we stayed there for 2 years and then moved over to a bigger radio station, 100,000-watt FM station. And we moved around on that from weekends to Monday through Friday, 11 to midnight, to Monday through Friday, 10 to midnight, to Monday through Friday, 9 to midnight. I said if we'd have stayed there another 5-6 years, we'd be on 12 hours a day. But that's not the way it worked out. And then we jumped over to podcast, strictly podcasting, because it was just better money. And we've been active now. This January 1st will be 15 years, our 15th anniversary. So 16 seasons of the show, 15 years being on the air.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll get to the podcasting end of it here at some point. But little known fact about Dave Schrader, he almost ended this show inadvertently. How did this happen? So after the first night after I did my show, right? So, first time I did my show, right? Barely got through it because, all the nerves and all this other stuff. I close out, right? And I go to the internet network that I'm on, right? Go to listen to the next show, and you're on it, okay? And I listen to you talk and how smooth you are and all this other stuff, and I go, this is just the wrong thing. I'm just foolish, right? Like, I just mumbled and run through the show, and then I hear this guy, and I'm like, there's not a shot in the world. Like, what am I doing? This is the worst idea I've ever had.
No, right? It worked out well for you, man. Listen, if it's funny, we've now been able to replace our first couple of seasons. So people that go to Darkness Radio, and we're on all the different podcasting platforms, we've now got episodes from 2006 and 2007. And it's funny because you can hear me struggling. I'd been out of radio since 1990. So I'd been out of radio for, 16 years. And I'm very... Tom Brokaw, and I'm so tell me, Jim, exactly how long did you live in the haunted house? And there was no Dave personality behind it. I just asked the questions on the sheet in front of me. I tried to build off of that a little bit, but you could hear how uncomfortable I was in the first season. And then, like Tim says, somewhere around September of 2006, all of a sudden I started to become Dave and let me out of the bag and realize I didn't have to follow these constraints. And we started having a lot more fun doing the show, so much fun that we're 15 years in, and I plan on doing it till I'm 75. So I got a lot of years left in front of me.
Well, I asked George Norrie that probably a couple of years ago. Does he have a plan to retire? And he says no. And I said, so they're going to be taking the microphone out of your cold, dead hand, the Charlton, referencing that. And he says, pretty much. And yep. I'm like, well... I mean, I've never thought of, I mean, I guess I'm a little bit younger. I guess I don't have to worry about that yet.
Yeah, I don't look toward the end. I just keep moving for today because all we have is today. So let's enjoy it and make the best of it. And that's what we keep doing.
Now, not to get too gritty because I know there's contracts and all those other things involved, but the change from Podcast One to Stitcher, was that you? Was that them? How did that all happen? Because it fascinates me, but like I said, I don't want to get too gritty into it.
No, it was us. We just felt that we wanted to make a move. And Midroll had a better, Midroll Stitcher had a better program. They were available on more sites because for the longest time, Podcast One, you could only get it on iTunes and Podcast One. So all of these listeners who like to listen to us on different platforms like Podbean and Stitcher and all of these other locations, when we weren't available, they didn't follow us because you get used to your podcast tool and you only listen to that one. So we've noticed by going back, we've found all these people that are like, oh my God, you guys are still alive. I thought you died. You were there one day and then gone the next. So we've built up a lot more people and we're constantly expanding our audience base because of that.
Yeah. That's the fine line, right? Like I know there's the Joe Rogan thing and I often wonder, I mean, $200 million is $200 million. Don't get me wrong. If that's a good move for him, but I guess time will tell on that one.
Well, yeah, it's good for him. Look at the money he's making.
Yeah, like I said, I can't begrudge him the money. I just worry, wonder how that's going to look in 5 years.
It didn't seem to deter Howard Stern, right? I mean, he was the first one pulling down Crazy Bank by jumping over to Sirius XM. And, if that works for Rogan, great. I hope to one day have that problem.
Right? Don't we all hope to have that problem someday? So that's the paranormal end of this. How did you get into the true crime stuff? I mean, obviously, I'm going to assume there was an interest, but an interest to take it. I mean, that's beyond taking it as
well,
an interest. So
you know, on our show, we would occasionally run into some of these weird stories where, there were crimes that were committed that people put on their belief on werewolves or witches or Ouija boards or ghosts or vampires. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? So we would find a couple of these stories and we'd notice this crazy uptick of, an additional 20,000 downloads of that episode that we're like, where did those 20,000 people come from? And the next episode would be paranormal and it would drop 15,000. You know, we'd lose that. We'd lose 15,000 of those new 20,000. And then 2-3 weeks later, we might do another true crime and up 25,000. And you're like, well, this is weird. Because I remember Tim, you know, I always believe we got to keep adjusting. And Tim is a lot more, you can't shuffle things around. People don't like change. And I said, I understand that, but we're not really changing. We're adding this dynamic because truthfully, it started to become a raging pain in the butt when we were doing 5 nights a week of coming up with paranormal guests, five nights a week that were compelling. So, and especially for a 3-hour show, 5 nights a week, 15 hours. So I said, why don't we make one night news where we talk about supernatural news from around the world? We'll have a couple of correspondents who can join us and we'll do movie reviews and book reviews and just be a different style vibe that night. And then, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, we'll do interviews. And then on Fridays, we'll do, or on Tuesdays, we can kind of start to focus on true crime. And he was a little reticent, but he had seen that we had done something that he didn't expect with the popularity of Darkness Radio at first. And True Crime Tuesday started taking off. And like I said, we started seeing a totally different crowd of people. We had a lot of our Darkness Radio listeners who would tune in, but they didn't like the dark aspect of true crime. But then there were all these true crime people, and we really were kind of at the forefront of all the true crime podcasts, you know? So it was nice to know we were really out there at the beginning with Jim Harold and Ghostly Talk for Paranormal. Really, that was all that was really out there at that time. And Night Watch, I think, with Todd Sheets when we started in 2006. And then we've hung in, and I think Jim and I are really the only two left from that original, you know, wall of sound of paranormal. And Jim was doing true crime too. And, you know, it seemed to fit. And we have a good audience. As a matter of fact, if we would skip, we'd have a huge outrage. People were like, why didn't you do true crime this Tuesday? I'm like, well, we had another great paranormal guest. They're like, put them on next week. Get us the true crime. And I was always fascinated with it because, sadly, my life was touched by true crime. I lost a she wasn't my girlfriend at the time, but she had been my first girlfriend in high school. So my first real girlfriend. And we ended up connecting again in 87 when my girlfriend was expecting our first child and she was expecting her first son. And I stepped in and tried to help her. She was having a rough time of it financially and everything. So we helped kind of get her so she wasn't sleeping on the floor 9 months pregnant and, you know, just tried to help her out, and we became close as friends again. And we were close for a number of years, and then I went off into my world to go have a life, and we kept in touch from time to time. And then she was brutally murdered, and her unborn baby at the time was stolen from her. And it was just a horrible story. And that really kind of kicked my true crime fascination through the roof, because I just wanted to know. It was scary to me that one person is capable of murder and just being that cold and calculating. I could understand in the heat of passion, of anger at the moment of you guys getting into a fight and maybe you accidentally murder somebody. I guess I could understand that, but I could never understand, oh, that Jim Mallard. Oh, I'm going to set this up. I'm going to poison his tea slowly over the next 6 months. And, you know, I mean, that kind of cold, calculative attitude was beyond me. And then to realize that people came together. And that sometimes it was more than one knucklehead working together to do these murders. And in the case of the death of my friend Deb, it looks like it was three, possibly four people, maybe even five, totally in on the conspiratorial angle of murdering my friend to steal her baby. And I wanted to try to understand why. Why do people act this way? And I also wanted to try to do a show where we definitely talked about the victims and gave voice and face and acknowledgement of who these people were, because it's a shame to me that she just became welfare mom, was murdered and her baby stolen, and the stars of this story became these three animals that murdered her, and people were taking shots at my friend, and oh, welfare mom, what'd you expect? I'm like, good God, who, what did you expect? I didn't expect her to get murdered. Because you're in welfare shouldn't get you murdered, right? That's just a byproduct. She was in a bad relationship in a bad area with bad people. And you can't judge her harshly for that, because that was what was afforded to her at the time. So I wanted to do a show where we talk about these victims and give you their story, so you remember Deborah Evans, or you remember the murder victims in XYZ or this or that. And sometimes you got to talk about the murderer, you know, Ted Bundy. How do you not talk about how freaky the guy was? And the fact that court, his own attorneys and psychiatrists would smell the sulfur smell coming from him when he would get upset. And sometimes his blue eyes would turn black. That's the law. His attorneys and doctors talking about that. That's creepy. That's weird. And those elements just seem to play well with our paranormal audience.
So you're going to have to forgive me because you're doing the true crime. Is that all still in the same feed, or are they different shows that you have to pick up on?
Well, we're all on Stitcher. It's under the Stitcher Premium for True Crime Tuesday. But here's a good deal. For years, we've been doing True Crime Tuesday as a standalone show over on Patreon. So you paid $5 a month. You got all of our episodes. Now you spend $4 or $5 a month through Stitcher Premium, and it gets you access to True Crime Tuesday with no commercials, all of Darkness Radio with no commercials, and every other show on Stitcher with no commercials. So your $5 a month doesn't get you one show. It gets you every show ad-free on their Stitcher Premium app. So it's a hell of a deal. And if you have listeners that want to do that, they can sign up and use code word Darkness Radio, and they'll get deep discounts to do this for a year-long subscription. They could pay $30-$40 for a year-long subscription and get all of that content commercial free. So it's kind of a cool little deal. But so True Crime Tuesday is under that umbrella. But then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we have free shows of Darkness Radio that you can tune into on Stitcher. And they have ads embedded in them. If you want the episodes without the ads, if you're a premium Stitcher subscriber, you'll get those as well. And usually we do Wednesday and Thursday is for Darkness Radio, the paranormal. Friday, while the Holzer Files are on, we're doing that live stream Thursday night after the Holzer Files ends, where I talk to a few guests. We take the audio from that and make it available as a special bonus episode of Darkness Radio on Fridays. So we are always trying to give the audience a little bit more than they're expecting.
So speaking of the audience,
you were worried I wouldn't be able to fill a whole hour.
No, I was worried that we weren't going to get everything in the hour, and I've still got a bunch that I want to... Well, we'll get there, though. I'm going to just ask you point blank. Do you miss doing the show 5 nights a week?
I miss live radio. I miss the element of live and taking live phone calls. I miss music. You know, it sounds strange, but I miss being able to play some cool 80s music or thematic music on the episodes. But I can live without it as well. There's a certain freedom to doing podcasts that you can't do on live radio. And then there are elements you give up. And, you know, here's the sad truth of this. We did our radio show for a major network, iHeartRadio, for 8 years. We were consistently in the top downloaded shows, their podcasts. So we'd be live on the air, and then it would go in podcast form. We were consistently in like the top 5 or 10 downloaded podcasts nationwide. Our station, you know, we had Dr. Laura or somebody before, Laura Ingram before us, and a couple other shows. We were outperforming those shows and other talk stations with our paranormal show. So we were doing great, but we made $10.65 an hour for 3 hours a night. So I was making, you know, roughly 30. My kids could make more working at Taco Bell than I was making doing radio 5 nights a week. So I don't miss the not getting paid for the hard work and effort that we put into it.
Yeah, that's troubling especially when you figure out what some of those people make an hour.
Right. Yeah, because I can work now. You know, now we do, you know, 2-3 shows a week, and we're making, you know, well, you know, sometimes almost 2 to 3 times what we were making. Well, in a lot of cases, 4 times what we were making doing it 5 nights a week, 3 hours a night, plus preparation time and everything. So it just, you know, just not there for you. You gotta do what you gotta do to make it work. And, you know, I want to put the time into it and not have it just be split where I'm doing a day job and then trying to do the radio show, because I don't think you get a full, you know, in my opinion, I don't think I could commit to 2 of those things at once. So to try to give the best, I just, I try to give the best by just being focused on that episode.
So I've got to ask, you know, I promise not to ask you the, who was your favorite guest question, but I'm gonna double down and ask an even more difficult.
Well,
question.
I'm gonna answer for you. Oh. I've had so many, but it was a real trip. Was talking to Dan Aykroyd and his dad Peter Aykroyd when Peter wrote a book about the paranormal. To have Dan Aykroyd and his dad on our show talking about their three generations of Aykroyds that were ghost hunters and investigators and paranormal enthusiasts. That was one of the highlights for me. But I've spoken to so many amazing people. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, you know, the queen of the night. Even George Norrie was on the show. And then I got to be a fill-in host on Coast to Coast AM for 5 years. And, there's been so many great opportunities afforded to me. But I would say Dan Aykroyd and Peter Aykroyd, just because of the legacy of Dan Aykroyd and all that he's put into his true love of the paranormal field. But, you know, there's no one specific guest that's been greater than others. I had a couple of guests I can't stand and I will never speak to again.
We'll get those here in 40 after hours. So I'll get those in 25 minutes. So I don't have to talk to them.
No, I won't even mention that because I don't want to do that service to them. But if you've listened to the episodes.
I'm talking off the air. Don't worry. Calm down.
Ed Azoski. There you go. That's the big one. I'll throw that out there. You guys find the Darkness Radio Ed Azoski episode. You'll enjoy yourselves. You get a good laugh and understand why we'll never have him on the show again.
No, but my double down question was, do you prefer TV or radio?
I prefer radio. I'm a very shy person by nature. This feels very intimate to me. To me, it's two guys talking. I try to put out of my head that there's thousands of people listening. And when I do Darkness Radio, it's Tim and I, two buddies, talking about stuff that we enjoy talking about and laughing together and making each other think or challenging each other. And it just so happens that there's, 40, 50,000 people tapping our lines, listening to our conversation. TV makes me feel a lot more mindful. You know, look how fat I look in that scene. Oh God, why didn't I shave my head in that episode? Oh God. You know, why do I look so puffy there? Why do I look so old? Why? It's a lot more abusive psychologically to me to do TV. And I've guessed it on Ghost Adventures. I think between their live shows and the episodes I've appeared on, I think I've been on like 10 or 11 episodes of Ghost Adventures. I've been on Paranormal State. I did Haunted Hospitals. So I've popped up on different programs throughout history. Plus I did Paranormal Challenge, that miniseries. And I've turned down a lot of opportunities to be an investigator on other shows. But when I heard the opportunity of getting to reopen Hans Holzer's case files, helping to shine a spotlight on this man who I feel was a forgotten forefather. Still a lot of people knew him, but there are generations that don't have a clue who he is. They know who Jason, Grant, Zach, Nick, Eric, Billy, you know, all of those people are, but they have no clue who, you know, D. Scott Rogo or Dr. William Roll or even Professor Lloyd Auerbach, Hans Holzer, even Ed and Lorraine Warren weren't getting their due for a long time. So I'm glad to be a part of this and representing it that way. So it's been a real privilege. So I enjoy that aspect of it. But the reason I got the job is because I do a radio show and because I'm good at asking questions and getting people to go along on the ride with me. And I get people that, you know, experiencers and historians to rethink what they're talking about. And sometimes it gives us surprising results.
So since Dave brought it up and rubbed some salt in the wound, I'm going to bring it up because I used to, way back when, the early days of the show, I was disappointed that the Paranormal Challenge wasn't a bracket-based show where you took a bunch of teams and then they battled each other and then went to the next place and then we had a winner.
That would have been great. And I think that's what we were hoping for, is to start pitting, you know, Battle of the Champions against each other for season two. But this is what I will say. It was a fun show. It got great ratings. People loved it, but it was a really expensive reality show because we had like two or three truckloads of equipment because we had to wire up entire places and we didn't have one team investigating. We had two teams investigating plus all of us in the nerve center. So they had to have like three independent groups filming. So it's triple what we do on Holzer Files, maybe even quadruple what we do on Holzer Files. So it just, you know, financially for reality TV, that didn't make a lot of sense. So that's kind of why they took it apart.
Well, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that was my axe to grin. I wanted a clear winner, like just because.
Yeah, just because, well, the audience, they got to watch me on TV.
The audience doesn't matter, Dave. Forget those people. You should know better than that by now.
I know.
Okay, let's get that up here. I had to. What was your first paranormal experience?
My first paranormal experience that I remember, or the first one that my family tells me about?
Let's go with the one you remember.
First one I think I really remember vividly. I mean, I had weird stuff happening in my house, but the one that really stands out to me was I was walking to my friend's house, and it was right around Halloween. And I was walking past this little ranch house in Medina, Illinois. And, you know, it was back in the late 70s when we didn't have 22,000 channels to watch and we didn't have cell phones to connect us and, you know, get fascinated with. So we used to look out our windows at neighbors and watch things. And as I was walking past this house, I noticed there was a man inside his house at his picture window looking out. And then there was a sidewalk in front of the picture window and a row of hedges in front of the sidewalk. And I kept walking and I turned back around. And now the guy was outside standing in front of the hedges. So somehow he phased through a window over a sidewalk and in front of bushes and is standing perfectly still without making a noise. And then I took a few more steps. I'm like, wait a minute. Was he inside all the time or outside? And I just, my eyes. And so I turned back around. Now he's in the middle of the yard standing there staring at me. And my heart rate started to go up and I started feeling really uneasy and frightened. Now, there was nothing traumatic about this. He wasn't like holding a flaming head in one hand and cackling at me. He just moved in a very weird way. And when I turned back around, he's like 6 feet away from me on the corner of his property. And then I took off like a bat out of hell. And I would go out of my way to avoid walking past that house up until today. You know, so 45 years later, I still have a hard time walking past that house. It just unnerves me. But again, there's nothing specific that was so chilling. It was just, I think that was the first ghost I was really aware of. Holy crap. And then I found out that the father had died a few years earlier in front of that picture window on Christmas. So he had a massive heart attack, sadly. And I think it was just him just checking the neighborhood.
Makes sense. So I'm going to reword this question because I think I'm going to ask it backwards compared to how they ask it. It's multi-part, so bear with me. Do you do anything to protect yourself before you go to an investigation, and have you had anything attach itself to you after an investigation?
I'm a man with 8 children. I don't know much about protection. I always do a prayer of protection around myself before going into an investigation to keep myself clear of anything meaning to do me harm. It can let itself be known to me. It can manifest, but it cannot harm me. And I do a prayer after. And they don't show this on TV because, in all honesty, people get so easily offended by any kind of religious invocation. But at every location, I just do a prayer. I just invite the Lord in and the Holy Spirit to wash through these rooms in the blood of Jesus Christ and help any spirits that are lost or confused to find their way home, and any spirits that wish to remain to do so. I also ask that you clear me, my mind, body, and soul of any attachments or any spirits, and I pray this in your name, amen. And that's what I do at every location to try to help clear the location and clear myself. I don't know if it works. I've had some weird experiences from time to time that seem to have followed me home, but I don't know if it's truly an attachment or is it spirits know I'm looking, so they're, there's a light on that guy. He talks to us. Let's go ring his bell. So it's hard to say, but we've had a few weird experiences through the years. I can't deny, but I can't, again, I can't, it's not like I can look, see the ghost and say, oh, hey, Mr. Belvoir from the winery, what are you doing here? Right. I have no clue where these spirits came from or what they are.
Wouldn't it be a lot easier if you could though?
Oh man, that'd make life a hell of a lot easier.
Oh boy. People would still doubt us though.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, what's next for Dave Schrader? Boy, that's like the worst question I could ask you. Two words. Right. What's
I
next?
Don't know. I'm content doing a radio show, a TV show. I have an amazing wife, fantastic children, a new grandbaby. I've got 5 grandkids, Jim.
Jeez, babe.
A brand new grandbaby boy who's living with me, and I just want to get through this COVID nonsense. And I want to be safe and happy and healthy and be that way with my family. And hopefully, we'll all get through this and see the sunlight together and get back to a normal world. That's really all I could hope for.
So it's been a while since I've done this with a guest, but I want to ask you 2 very different questions. So we're going to start with the first one.
And then sounds good.
They're kind of the same question, but obviously they're different topics. For the paranormal people out there, some sage words, some wisdom, however you know what I'm saying. What would be your message to them if they're listening and are a paranormal investigator or out there doing some of this stuff?
Listen, we're all fascinated by what comes next. Just be careful and always check the intent of why you do things. If you're going out to just scare yourself, save it and go to haunted houses at Halloween. Go on spooky roller coasters. Do that kind of stuff to get the thrill, because it is a sight unseen kind of environment. And if you don't take care of yourself and you're not cautious, it can affect you and people around you. So I'm always, that's my big thing. It's just be cautious. I think intention is the most important thing in everything we do. I set an intention as a child that I wanted to do radio. I do radio. I, set an intention that I wanted to be a popular radio show talking about the paranormal. And I wanted to kind of be an opening act to Coast, even though we were on 2 totally different networks. And I made that happen. When we switched over to the bigger network and I told them, you need to bring Coast to Coast over here. It's a premier product and, it should be on your station. They did it. And I got to open for Coast to Coast. And, I wanted to work on Coast to Coast and I got asked to be a host on Coast to Coast. And then I got to, I'm the only person that can say I got to host Art Bell's first show, Coast to Coast, and his final show, Midnight in the Desert, because I took over a Midnight in the Desert for 2 years before I left to focus on my show and the TV show. So, I was doing live radio again all the way up until January, February of this year, doing it 5 nights a week on Midnight. Yeah.
But, I'm aware.
Yeah. So that was it. I just, it's just been those little steps and trying to keep things, even. But you set the intent and look, I was friends with my wife for 6 years before we started dating. And when I saw a moment of weakness, I exploited the hell out of it. No, when I just thought, boy, she is the kind of woman I could see myself spending my life with. And on Halloween, 4 years ago, we were exchanging messages. And I said, boy, if you are ever single, I'm calling dibs. And she said, well, I'm considering separating because things have not been the way I would like them to be. And I think both my husband and I deserve to find somebody that makes us happier. And I said, well, let me know. And, February rolled around. We went on our first date and it was magic. And we got engaged that July. We were married by November and we just celebrated our 3rd year together as a married couple. But it was an intention I put out there. Some would call it a magic spell, but I think it's intention is all about what we do in the world and what we put out there and our expectations back. And I think that's why I continue to be successful and get to do the things I love to do.
So before I ask this next part of this loaded question, immediately following this program, I'm going to go over to the bedroom where my laptop computer is, and I'm going to send you a screenshot of the back of it.
Okay.
Because it says set the intention on it.
That's right. That's the key element to success in every aspect of your life.
So when you're sitting here saying that, I don't want to say it's confirmation, obviously, because I've had that confirmation from other people. And, but again, here we are again, confirmation, things build. So the other part of this loaded question is more sort of towards the podcaster, because I'm looking at my chat room and I have a bunch of paranormal podcasters in there right now. And even, as I look at other shows and know that I'm, 10 years into this, they're younger on their adventure, but there's always room for growth. And having you here makes me want to ask this question.
Sure.
What as advice for people doing radio podcasting, whatever this new media turns into, I think it's going to get another term eventually. It's just going to become something better, but that's here or there. That's my opinion. What do you think? Give me some of those sage words for this business.
You know, be true to yourself. Enjoy what you do. I learned early on that, you know, I let my guests shine as much as I can, but I'll challenge them. I try to do it with respect and humor and love. And I think that's why I've been successful getting answers. And I live for the comment, you know what? Nobody's ever asked me that before. Wow, that's an excellent question. I've never thought of that before. So I love, those are the moments I live and breathe for. So live for the moment. Be in the moment with these guests. Be in the moment and cognizant of the conversation you're having, because for either one of you, it could be the last conversation you'll ever have. So make it count. And I think that's, again, part of the success. There are times we wander and our minds wander when we're doing these shows, or, you know, 15 years in, am I always hyper focused? No, but when I remember that, I try to key back in and really enjoy those times. And I can tell, because then all of a sudden I'll get an explosion of emails. Man, that was your best show. You know, and I'm like, great, because again, I was keyed into that moment. And then, you know, you get back into that swing of remembering to be there. And that's what I try to do when I'm ghost hunting. You'll see I don't always use a lot of equipment because I want to be in the moment. I don't need to convince you or anybody else of what's out there. I just want to see it for myself. And if you're along for the ride and you get to see it as well, awesome. And if you don't, I don't care, because I'm the one I have to answer to at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's the key. And I appreciate that immensely, because like you, I had those rigid moments and I sat there and prepared all the questions, Dave, and, you know, you could have told me that you walked on the moon, right? And I would have been like, so tell me about the Holzer Files.
No. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You don't, you missed that chance. And you're like, wait a minute, you walked on the moon. When did this happen? Right. And, you know, we all have those little windows that slip past us. But, you know, being cognizant of them and maybe even trying to revisit those later on in the conversation, as long as you're aware, that's what really counts. And, you know, if you're either ripening on the vine or you're dying. So I continue to just try to ripen. I just want to, you know, I want to learn. I want to have fun, and I want to educate and entertain people. And you forget sometimes, like I said, we do this show where it's two buddies talking about something that fascinates us with a guest or just between each other. And then I get emails from people from around the world telling me, you know, in the darkest hours of my life, you guys made me laugh. You have no idea how important your show is to me. Or in my darkest hour, you had a guest on that spoke to my situation and made me feel like I want to live again, or it made me happy. Man, that's it. That's what it's all about.
I will say this. I did contact him a couple of days ago, asked him for a story or something that I should mention to you, and he did not sell you down the creek.
Who's that, Tim?
Yeah, I told Tim that. And I told Tim that he's going to be a guest on this program because he's been, you know, it's scary. He's been requested on this program. So, I mean, I must be doing something right. So we'll be getting him on soon. So
sure.
Be looking forward to that message from me to you about him. So if you've got any good stories.
always.
Speaking of sending you a message, where can people find you and all, you know, give me that list of things so people know where to find you.
Darknessradio.com. That's where you can find everything about us. All of our social media there, links to our YouTube page is there, info on how to find our show is there. And here, you can make it so easy. We are on every platform, so whatever smart device you use, just ask it, Alexa, play the newest edition of Darkness Radio Podcast, and it'll fire off for you. Or Echo or Google or whatever you need to ask Echo, turn off. She was listening to me, Jim. She was
I was going to say, now I hear in the background the show started.
Right. So you just ask the smart device. It'll turn on for you. You can also get the free Darkness Radio app in your app store and take us along with you on the road. So those are the best ways to find us. And then remember, Holzer Files, every Thursday night. We've got four episodes in the bank. We've got, nine more episodes to go this season. And right after it airs on Travel Channel, you can go over to my YouTube channel or my Facebook page and watch along as I do Holzer's Ghosts After Show, where we talk about the program you just watched and we have a good time together. So that's the best way to do it.
So we've got a minute and a half left, or, well, actually, 30 seconds left. Oh, Dave.
Okay.
I got outro music now. Oh, Dave, 30 seconds.
Well, Jim, thanks for having me on. I know you've been a great supporter and friend through the years, and I'm glad that we were finally able to connect and get together. So thank you for doing the work that you do and entertaining people and inviting me to be a part of your world.
I was going to say, thank you for coming on, and we have to do it again.
But I said it first, so ha-ha.
I was going to say, we have to do it again before 10 years passes. So,
it sounds good, man. Anytime, just let me know.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a good evening.
You too. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mail Report. Stay tuned for details on saving money at the Duck Pond Shop. I hope you enjoyed this report. Please subscribe so that you can join us again. And if you appreciate the show, leave us some stars or a review. For more notes from this show or other great shows, check out Mellor.com. A reminder, the views and opinions of this show are those of the host and guests and do not represent any sponsors, affiliates, or any other partners of the Mellor Report. Now for your money-saving tip. Promo code Mellor at checkout of DuckPondShop.com, where you can get your t-shirt, coffee mug, and other great products. That's promo code Mellor at checkout, DuckPondShop.com. Until next week, stay safe and keep quacking.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.